Blog Talk Radio.
Gather round. Witness the memoirs of 5'9 being read as he sees it fit. Police sirens behind him while he's driving instantly causes butterflies in his stomach, even though he's legit.
Hey, what's going on, world? Welcome to the Positive Response Summit, hosted here by H. Zayas. I guess we give a quick intro. Zayas Barnett, wonderful, wonderful human being who taught us all here in life that we have an opportunity on this world to make an impact and a change through our works. Zayas was unfortunately lost early in life due to violence. And what we like to do here with our show is start to work towards a true understanding of what males and females can do in our community to respond more positively to our day-to-day environment and our day-to-day issues. So today's topic is youth self-medication through cannabis. Wow, this is such a hard topic. And one of the reasons that it's hard is because we need to do a little bit of background on cannabis is because of the history of prohibition. So number one, cannabis. Cannabis was a plant. It's a plant that is grown naturally. It's found in nature. It contains substances called cannabidiols. The substances in the cannabis plant are broken down into two main categories, THC, which is the psychoactive component that people usually refer to getting high. And then you have CBD, which is a non-psychoactive component. And I guess I like to compare it to similar to maybe collard greens. So why I say that is because what we don't often realize is that the United States government has a patent on the cannabidiol system, the neuroprotective and antioxidant qualities of this plant. The government granted a patent for in 2003. So we ask the question, well, why is it criminal? And then we ask the question, well, who should have access to this plant? One of the common misconceptions is that the only way to consume cannabis is through smoking. This is a huge, huge error. The plant, number one consumption form in the world, is in a tea or milk extract. So most other countries and most other classes, I guess, of people all around use cannabis in an extract, tea, or milk form. The smoking part does a process called decarboxylation, which activates the psychoactive component. So that allows individuals to get high, quote unquote. Now you have two psychoactive component target areas. One is a body high, which is your indica type plants, quote unquote, in the couch, and your head high, which is your sativa type plants. Now within both those, you have a mixture of, I guess you would say, in between their health benefits that come from being able to alleviate pain, stress. Some of the principles in this plant have been known to reduce the effects on cancer. But when we all look at the issue, one of the main components now we find out is youth consumption. All right, so we're going to start our conversation here. I want everybody to call in if you have an opportunity. It's 516-595-8311. So I'm going to take a first caller. Hold on. First caller, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for logging in. So today we're talking about cannabis, and we're getting into the conversation about how youth should be involved in cannabis, considering some of the health benefits and some of the new. So do you have any opinion left, right, about youth cannabis?
Well, let me say, I'm Delzora Wall, and hi, Brandon. Thank you for hosting the show. I am the president of Justice from A to Zayas, and I also like to mention I am an administrator at an organization called Boys Town. And when you talk about the cannabis, and you say youth self-medicating through cannabis, I think about the kids at Boys Town as well as the children we work with. And I understand the concept now about the cannabis. There was a time where I really didn't get it because I'm definitely not an advocate of getting high or having any substance that controls my mind or have me basically somewhat out of control. And so it really took getting a great understanding of how it's used for our medication to help people. And so I'm all for that. But when we say self-medicating for youth, I guess
Let's not go too far because I want to lay that concept out. We're going to let a couple other callers on here. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Hey, caller number two, how are you? Hello, hello. All right, we're going to try one more time. Caller number two, hi, hello.
Good morning, everyone. This is Chelsea. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm certainly appreciating the conversation that you've started this morning about cannabis. I have been enlightened in multiple ways just before. I was just calling in to listen and get a better understanding, and you're doing an outstanding job of broadening my thoughts.
Awesome, awesome. So we have another caller on, the president of A2Zayas. We have Ms. Cara on, who's also instrumental with A2Zayas. So we're going to keep going here. All right, so youth self-medication. So let's break this down. So as we noted, we work in the community in various fields here with the program A2Zayas. And what we often run across is many youth that consume cannabis in one way or the other. Okay, so once they consume cannabis, they're receiving the effects of cannabis. This may not be a positive thing at the time because they're doing it themselves. They're not talking with the physician. Most of the time, they're not letting their parents know what's going on. And then as we progress, if they're in trouble for it, if they get found with this substance, they're arrested. After the arrest, they are given a criminal record. That criminal record affects their ability to go to college. Almost 200,000 students a year lose their federal financial aid eligibility due to a marijuana-related conviction. So you're not able to receive financial aid if you receive a marijuana-related conviction. Now, mind you, many states have starting to progress forward with their laws in terms of medical or not, but that does not affect youth. That does not affect youth who are at a high consumption rate. The 15 through 21 category is a super high rate. Now, what happens, as we noted, once these individuals are found with the substance, irrespective of why they're using it, they're typically given a criminal record. So let's say this happens at school. It happens on school grounds. So now they have a serious charge that forever affects their life. So for all intents and purposes, the posed question today is how should schools really be responding to youth who consume cannabis in light of the change in laws and legislation that's going on and the new information that's been presented about the potential medical benefits and known medical benefits to considering the DEA, what they call the Controlled Substances Act, which was a policy implemented by President Nixon in the 60s that rated each scale of narcotic. Now, for cannabis and all other narcotics, the scale was based on two factors. Factor number one was known medical history and potential for substance abuse was component number two. Now, during this policy reform period in the 60s, President Nixon hired a commission. They studied all the drugs, and they came back with a report. It was found that cannabis was a lower offender than sugar or caffeine and definitely tobacco. It had a huge medical history, over 10,000 years of medical history, and was non-addictive. And so irrespective of that, President Nixon went on record and said that, hey, how dare you as a commission bring me report findings that will embarrass the American public? And since then, we've gone on to lock up a disproportionate amount of minorities and Latino American youth, especially males, for consuming cannabis, possessing cannabis, and we've fueled our prison industrial complex by this and removed many children's ability to go to college. So as we start to lay out the premise of what social responsibility is, I guess I'm going to ask one of the callers, what do you think a school should do if a child is caught with cannabis on the premises?
Well, this is Ms. Barnett, and I feel that whatever the rules, whatever the school rules are, need to be enforced. I understand the concept for me. I feel like there's a lot of laws put in place, especially for people of color, where we're winding up, a whole lot of our people are winding up in prison, especially young males. And, of course, this is about positive male response. We need to make sure that as parents, even though I don't have any children in school, but still as parents and community, we need to make sure that these laws that they are effective and that they're not to take away, as you stated. This can stop the child, and I worked in financial aid, from receiving financial aid, a student from receiving it. We need to make sure that, you know, is this the last resort for them to take cannabis in the school? It shouldn't be self-medicated. It should be administered definitely, you know, by parents. Or, you know, they should have complete control of this. But I think we should try to find other means and other ways to help our young people instead of giving them a drug that most take to get high for their own personal use, to give them a feeling, and this can harm them and cause them from being productive citizens in, you know, society, i.e. not able to get financial aid to attend college.
Awesome.
I just think that we have to be definitely more educated and that we have to be more involved, not just parents, but the community as well, because we need our young males. We need them on the streets. We need them in college. We need them in the politics. We need them professionally, and we don't need them locked up. We have too many locked up now.
Well, thank you for that. So one of the concepts that I'll talk about in relation to your comment before we go to our next caller is what happened in Colorado. So Colorado is a huge state. It's a wonderful state. I've been there a couple of times that has seen a huge influx in their economy and their business because of the implementation of cannabis regulation and laws. Now, what happened when they implemented those laws is everyone expected the crime rate to go down. And across the board, it did. However, for two categories of citizens, Latino Americans and African Americans, youth age 14 through 20, saw increased rates of incarceration. Actually, I think Latino Americans went up 26%, and African Americans went up almost 59% from the last study period for cannabis related arrests. So it was a direct connection with the drug, the plant, and I will say drug because I do consider it as such, being legalized and readily available and youth being caught with it of minority descent. Now, for the same rate for Caucasian youth in the same age range, the arrest ratio went down minus 9%. So I went out to Colorado, and it was a phenomenon. I asked a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. His name is Art Way. He works with the Drug Policy Alliance out there. And I was there for a wonderful diversity summit, and I asked him, I said, Mr. Way, why did this happen? And he said, well, Mr. Way, it's the schools. Because of the way the schools regulate in urban environments, they're allowing this to become a criminal issue versus where in more, I guess you would say, not just urban, but different social demographic environments, there's a criminal issue, and versus where it's a more majority culture is actually considered a medical issue. So if someone's caught with a Caucasian child's caught with cannabis, is realized that, hey, this plant helps cure depression. It works on anxiety. It's actually preferred for people as opposed to taking some of the antidepressants as a youth and also Ritalin, ADHD medicine. People are looking and exploring that. So the teachers and counselors at those schools recognize that, and then they give a call over to the parents. The parents come pick the child up. Of course, the child's in trouble. They shouldn't have the substance on campus and at it all based on regulations, but the parents are given a chance to come and intervene. However, at minority schools, the police are given a chance to come and intervene. So I'd like to pose that question or if so for the second caller. Ms. Carr, what do you think about that?
Well, it's something that needs to be talked about and brought to the front. so that our children have an equal opportunity to, you know, go through the channels properly and not be penalized for, you know, inappropriate lapse in judgment or whatever you want to call it as it relates to the substance. But I think that the laws should be shared with the parents so that they can hold the school accountable as well as their children accountable for utilizing them well so that they're not penalized and miss out on the other opportunities you mentioned, such as financial aid and having it on their record, because we knew that's an epidemic, and because the statistics that you gave are disproportionate, you know what I mean? That speaks to it in and of itself.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. So I wanted to call one more, I guess, proposition to the table. So we have an understanding that the laws are based on criminalization, and they remove different elements of a young person's ability to succeed by having a positive future. Walking with a criminal record is a really hard thing to do in this life and time, but it also does another thing. It increases contacts with police, okay? So by you consuming cannabis, it increases contacts with police. And so one of the huge things that we have to, I guess, kind of shift maybe in our conscious thought is asking, well, if people consume cannabis for depression, if people consume cannabis for anxiety, for tense cannabis, and mind you, I didn't say smoke, I said consume. We have a huge push for states, 26 now, states or areas in the country have some form of legal cannabis, and we still have laws that take the first opportunity to put a youth who's caught with cannabis into the system to affect their earning a potential outcome in the future. So what they call that is the effects of the war on drugs. The war on drugs was something, as I said, started in the 60s with President Nixon. And so as we kind of look through the years, how many youth have we seen that have chosen to consume cannabis, not probably letting their parents know, receiving the benefits of it one way or the other? If they're using it recreationally, they may not know that because this is a medicine, that the effects of it are, yes, you may experience some slowed down responses, you may experience feelings of euphoria, but it needs to be in a controlled environment. So that youth, as we've looked at through the years, may be consuming that plant because they're running from something. They're escaping something. They're feeling some kind of way. Life is hard. Being a teenager is hard. And so what we'll ask then is, well, are schools doing enough to make sure that once students are caught with cannabis, that they're input into a medical type of situation? Because once again, they're abusing medicine, okay? So if this plant is considered medicine, it's legalized as such, you can have a card as such, and you have a student who abuses a medication, would you call the police or would you call their parents and the doctor? That's really, really the core of where we start out. And so we look at some of these programs such as Boys Town, who have youth who are trying to transition out of foster care into other homes, and they are possibly caught with cannabis. How does that affect their ability to be adopted? That affects their ability to go through a different issue. So is it the school's responsibility, though the laws are as they are, is it a school's responsibility to give that child's parents the first right of notice because they're acknowledging a medical issue? And I'm going to ask you, Ms. Wall, what your thoughts on that are.
Definitely, Mr. Wyatt, and I was thinking that before you said it, like, okay, so now this is, should be looked at just as any other medication, Percocet or whatever, that may be abused. So in that case, you know, regardless, you look at the, you know, you broke down some amazing statistics for us. You really have educated us because it's a, you have the Caucasian kid who parent gets called, and then you have the African American or Hispanic kid who police is called. That shouldn't be the case. So we have an issue in the school system, and there is a problem, you know, with you know, I don't want to call a name, but anyway, there's an issue here, and we need to address that issue across the board. Everything should be across the board, no matter what the race or nationality of the student. The fact is, if the student is using the cannabis and they feel they shouldn't be using it at school or whatever, they're caught with it, they weren't supposed to have it, then the first contact should be their parent, because they're abusing their medication. There's a rule about medication. You cannot just walk around and have your medication in your purse in school. You have to go to the nurse, go to the office, and let them administer it, or your parent come and administer it. So at that point, just as if they would do any other medication, whether it's your asthma, just as they should see other medication, they would call the parent. This is what needs to happen. And Mr. Wyatt, I'm telling you, you have really enlightened us, and I'm here in the city of New Orleans, and now my thought is, I need to get into these school systems and see how are you handling this for these, you know, African American children, Hispanic children. What happens? Because that's what would happen at Boys Town if they're caught over medicated or taking their medication and not supposed to. They will call the parent teacher from the home that child is staying. Their Boys Town parent teachers will probably go in and pick up the child and deal with it. Yes, there are consequences behind their actions, but the police is not involved. A criminal charge is not involved because it shouldn't be at that point, not at the very offset of it.
And that's exactly where we have to look at it at. And one of the cool things about this show is it's a response summit. And so one of the best things, we're on Twitter, we have different people tweeting about it and going live and trying to get this message out to the world, because though we have laws that are in place uniformly, what we have is what we call social responsibility. There are principals, there are APs and teachers who are responsible for helping end the war on drugs. And so when we talk about ending the war on drugs, it is going to take a couple individuals to stand up to the laws as they are in place and use the tolerances that are there. Now, considering that cannabis is a Schedule I drug, and many school policies do indicate that if a student is caught on campus with a drug, that may be a federal offense. So it's a very, very serious thing. To have narcotics on school premises, and nor do we want other youth affected. But when we start to look at, I guess, the development of research and medication and scheduling, what we'll start to see is new products that involve cannabis, because as I noted earlier, the government has a patent in 2003, it granted a patent for the neuroprotecting and antioxidant qualities of the cannabidiol system that's in your body. So I'll go a little bit further about social responsibility. So social responsibility is that of all people to implement changes and acts in society that benefits the greater good. What we have in medical schools is a lack of education. And I'll say distinctly why, because there's a system called the endocannabinoid system that's not being studied. The endocannabinoid system is just as important as the circulatory system or your respiratory system. It's a system that regulates your body's chemistry. So it regulates the release of dopamine. That's where you get dope. Dopamine is also produced in mother's breast milk. It's a bonding agent. It's a lifter. It makes you happier. It gives you euphoric feelings. That's why drugs are related to dope. All right? And so now when we have schools that don't take the time to study this system, though the government has granted a patent on it in our medical schools, what we have is doctors who are not equipped with the proper information and scientists who are not given the proper access to the plant to provide research to find out other ways to help people who should not be, quote unquote, getting high. One of the huge movements is for CBD oil. Now, that's a great thing, because if you have epilepsy or seizures, that's something that you can take. Okay, now what we have on the other side is people like Drea Smalls in Texas, who leads Texas Normal, who introduced me to some parents and some leaders who talked about how they are scared to medicate their child because of the school's responses. So you have parents who have children with Down syndrome, with epilepsy, and other issues who are giving their children cannabis, not smoking it, giving them cannabis to consume in an edible form or extract or what they call a tincture to help with the effects of that injury or that illness, and they're scared. They're scared that the city is going to take their kids. They're scared the school is going to say something. But the reason they're doing it, and as noted by these parents, is because the effect on the kidneys, liver, and stomach of a growing, developing individual is dramatically affected by processing a large amount of white pill form substances into the body. So at some of the critical stages in development, these parents have said, hey, cannabis has had a positive effect on my child and is a lesser evil than it is to give them things that are unnatural and synthetic that will damage their body. All right, so we have one more caller that called in. I want to give them a chance to say hello. Hey, caller, last call, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Mr. Wyatt. How are you?
I'm well. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Eulalia Hall, and I am part of the A to Zayas organization as well.
Awesome. So we're talking about youth self-medication through cannabis. We're going through some of the laws and regulations, some of the policy issues, a implementation of social responsibility to help alleviate the criminal records for certain youth. But we're also now at the point of the conversation where we're talking about parents who choose to give their children cannabis to avoid the negative and potentially damaging, physically damaging side effects of giving the white pill form medication. Those parents are scared. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are it's really interesting with you giving out this information. It's really informative because, you know, I had no idea. So I feel like if it is, you know, going to be regulated and parents can use this as a form of medication over something that's going to harm their children later on in life and they develop more medical issues, I think that it should definitely be researched by the parents, you know, whose children have these medical conditions, if that's a better option. Also, I was just going to say, I heard you and Ms. Wall talking about the schools and how, you know, one ethnic group, their parents are called. However, the other two ethnic groups, the police are called. And I just want to, you know, say that's also a form of institutional racism where different ethnic groups are not treated the same, so it's more of a hindrance than a help. So that can also cause parents not to want to have their children treated in a way that can actually be better for the children.
Absolutely. And this is our positive response summit. So we're talking about giving the community information that they can use. So I'm glad that you called in, and I'm glad that you received a little bit of information more about this plant. So what I'll also talk about finally, and we got to end our show soon, is business opportunities. And what do I mean by business? So the business of cannabis is coming. We're having a summit here in D.C. called BUDS, the Business Understanding and Development Summit, budsdc.com, was talking about how businesses are infiltrating the field of cannabis, and we're talking about in this summit how we're using teachers and social responsibility to be able to start to access more research to provide better levels of medication for all patients. Now, one of the things we have is a new generation. We have a new generation that we're trying to remove the stigma of cannabis from, and we're trying to make sure that they don't have criminal records so that they can enter into possibly the field of medicine and come up with, many people are looking for, the cure for cancer, the cure for AIDS, or other issues, and not be fearful of the plant itself, but to stand up and to realize that this is a system that's in our body. The last bit of tidbit of information I'll give you is that the cannabidiol system, as I noted, is a system within our bodies. There's only two plants in the world that produce what they call cannabidiols that respond to that system. One is hemp, which we use to make American money and rope and was the most profitable American cash crop for a long time. And the other is cannabis, a plant we've removed from the ecosystem, okay? And so we have to look at our responses in the community. We have to look at our responses at schools. Each individual has a responsibility to every other individual on this earth to get as much information as possible to be as positive as we can. So thank you all for calling in, and we're out of here.
Thank you.
Gather round, gather round. Witness the memoirs of 5-9 being read as he sees it fit. Police sirens behind him while he's driving instantly causes butterflies in his stomach, even though he's